Hey fans, welcome to episode 159 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. As you all know, we are a Paul McCartney talk show, mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and hopefully you know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, a backwards traveler. He's Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on, brother?
Hey, Thomas. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Excited. Booked a flight to Jersey, and looking forward to having a good time.
Woke up this morning.
speaking of that. So today's what? The 6th? What's today? Today's the 6th, March 6th. Yeah. So we just finished the last episode of The Sopranos last night.
Made in America? Oh, you did Made in America.
Yeah, Made in America. Yeah. So we knocked it out relatively
quick.
Because
like I remember talking to you maybe like 2 months ago, and you guys were in season 3.
Yeah. So we got this. Got this a couple months ago.
It's crazy how affordable the thing is now.
This is the whole series.
How much? $100. $80 on Blu-ray.
$80.
Back in the day, the individual season. Well,
$100.
$100. 15 years ago. Crazy.
Yes. Yeah. This is my first time watching it all the way through at once. So, I've seen all the seasons.
Right. But to watch it all the way through straight.
Right. But to watch it all the way through. And this is the first time my wife's seen all of them. So she really enjoyed the show too, which was great. We would laugh at, they would say regat, instead of ricotta.
You don't say ricotta. Metagon say ricotta. It's
ricotta. You got the manicot, and gravy,
Get your manicot.
And gravy, we don't say gravy.
Well, I'm half Italian, okay? We don't say gravy. We say sauce. Yeah. It's just, when you come to Jersey, I'm going to take you over there to the gas station where Uncle Phil got popped. Bye-bye, Grandpa. Ah. Boom! It's about 10 minutes. It's right 10 minutes from my house. I'll show you, and it's still the same. Everything. Everything's still there.
Very cool.
Give you a little guided Sopranos tour when you get to Jersey.
Yeah. So we loved it. We loved watching it together. So it was a lot of fun. The two of the Blu-rays had a few issues. So only two episodes had little glitches that where we had to skip over it, unfortunately. But
you have HBO Max, right? You could have watched them on there.
Oh, no. I mean, we already pay for 20 apps as it is already. We don't need another stinking app.
You don't have HBO Max?
No.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay.
No. So, but yeah, a lot of fun. So now when we're done here, I'm going to go pick up the movie, the prequel film, The Many Saints of Newark.
So, let me know what you think about that.
Yeah. We'll watch that. Hopefully.
So do you understand the ending now, or are you one of those fans or did your wife say, what the hell just happened? Does she get it?
No, that's the beauty about it is, you leave it up to your own imagination what happened. I think it was last year David Chase had came out and said what actually happened to Tony. And, I'm not going to say it because if anybody who hasn't seen The Sopranos, which I would hope, many people have seen it by now, I was fine. I know a lot of people were pissed off about it. I know the thing is about, the song Don't Stop Believing was it's always been a popular song. Okay. But it just elevated that song to like almost icon status.
But it already was, I think, by the time that came out in 2007. I mean, but it really propelled over the last 15 years ago.
It just brought a whole new generation to that song,
Oh my god.
It almost kind of like what Wayne's World did with Bohemian Rhapsody,
Very much so.
You discover that song and then it's like your song, but then now everybody else knows the song thanks to Wayne's World, and it's just,
I thought it was a great choice. I know that tying in some recent news, I know that Steven Van Zandt did not want to use that song. He wanted to use a Procol Harum song called The Devil Came from Kansas, which obviously is a very, very deep cut. But if you listen, it's on A Salty Dog. Hint, hint, David Gargolino, who just got that album. I know he is enjoying it. It would work for that scene, but obviously Don't Stop Believing is so iconic, and it worked so well for that scene. How could you go wrong? Chase overruling Van Zandt. But, I still don't get tired of watching that scene, really. Members only, guy with the members only jacket, the onion rings.
Yes.
Car, Meadow parking the car. You're like, oh, my God, park this car already.
You got the guys sitting at the bar, kind of like peeping over. You got the, two black kids walking in. Every time you hear that jingle from the door open, you got Tony, looking at the door, seeing who the hell it is.
Hey, listen, a lot of foreshadowing in that last season. Tony and Bacala sitting on the boat. You probably never hear it when it's coming, right? Nah. Boom. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, the assassination scenes in there, and I remember what happened with Christopher. I just couldn't remember when it happened. Completely, because I hadn't watched this last season since I would say probably 2008 was the last time.
A long time ago.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. So yeah, I'm definitely glad that we revisited.
It's really their cell phones are in it, but they're pre-smartphone. So it's funny. They all have the flip phones. Freaking phones. We were better off years ago. Throws the thing.
We enjoyed that as well. So
we could maybe do a sub two-leg Sopranos podcast. I could talk for hours about that.
Probably.
But if you didn't know that during the pandemic, Michael Imperioli and Steven Schripper.
Yes, Bacala, they did a show. Right, yeah.
They started one Talking Sopranos, and they just finished it. They did one over every episode, and they just finished it a few months ago. The 86 shows, and they covered it. So, it's if anybody ever wants to kind of go into a Sopranos podcast, check out those guys, because that's that's them. It's awesome.
Yeah. So well done, David Chase. I mean, he brought on some, a great team of writers and directors. Dialogue has always been stellar in that show, and the acting is great as well.
Many of those writers and producers and actors are on one of my new favorite shows, which is on CBS, Blue Bloods. So Blue Bloods.
That's right. Bobby's on that one, right?
He is. Bacala is on Blue Bloods. Terrence Winter, one of the writers of The Sopranos, he's a writer for Blue Bloods. So this is a little two legs plug for Blue Bloods either. Check that show out. That is one of the best on television, bar none. 12 seasons running long.
Wow. Okay. Cool. So today's show, we're going to do a fan Q&A, which is something I've been wanting to do for a while now. And finally, we got a bunch of questions here, and we're going to get to those in a few minutes. But we're going to talk a little news here first, because we haven't really talked much news lately. There hasn't really been much. It's funny, though, because then it all happens all at once, so you can't just, space it all out. But
true Maca fashion, it just is, hey, I'm back, and I'm going to throw it all at you. So go right ahead, partner.
Go right ahead. So we know we have a Record Store Day coming April 23rd, I believe. And when that was first being announced, there was also being mentioned that there was going to be a Women and Wives 12-inch single that was only going to be in the UK, which, that's fine. They have their right to, release it wherever they want to. However, I'm kind of glad that this news was wrong, or it was changed, because now on June 18th, I guess there's going to be a second Record Store Day, and that's when we're going to get this Women and Wives 12-inch single, and only 3,000 worldwide. But the big news is that it's being named Record Store Day's Song of the Year. This is the very first time something like this has happened, that we're going to have like a Song of the Year. And, my big concern about this is it's only 3,000 copies. This single was not going to need any help selling out. You know what I mean?
So no, now my big concern is limited, is now, it's limited anyway, right?
Right, it's limited anyways. But now my big concern is like fans of Record Store Day who aren't necessarily Paul fans, they're going to go after this now as well. You know what I mean? Just your average collector. And that's going to take away from, you know, the McCartney fans. You know, so,
right, because they're gonna go seek it out. Who normally they wouldn't be seeking
it.
Paul's
they would give it the time of the day, but now because of this, you know, song of the year,
that's gonna make it even, you know, a scarce record, even more scarce.
Right, right. So, but you know, I don't doubt that, you know, we'll be able to get one. You know, again, I'll be in line. You know, early. My wife and I will be in line early in the morning. You know, hopefully to grab one. But you know, again, you know, right around that 3,000 range, it's usually, you know, stores will get it. You know, especially the stores that I have out here. I don't think we'll have a problem.
Will you do? Would that be an InGroove or would that be a?
Zia. Both will have it. I don't doubt.
Right.
Yeah.
But do you always go to the same store or do you just go to, yes. Do you go to?
Yeah. 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 And I won't say which one because, you know,
somebody else is going to get it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, so you got to keep some of the secrets a secret, you know?
Yes. Close to the best.
Yeah. But we got that to look forward to. For you McCartney fans that love to go see McCartney live, he added a second Fenway show, and this is going to be June 8th. So now it's the 7th and the 8th, I believe.
In Boston.
For that show. Yeah, for Boston. Yeah, Boston Fenway. So that, I'm sure there's going to be more shows added, I don't doubt. And then it's also officially announced that he is going to be doing the Glastonbury show as well.
Yes.
You know, which he was supposed to do 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's been a big, he posted on his social media that he's doing Glastonbury. He also, I don't know if you saw this too, Tom, he posted, you know, Dream Set List. Did you see that post? He was like, oh,
no.
You know. Yeah, he goes, you know, what would your dream set list be? And they put together like a Spotify playlist of like what their favorites are. I didn't check it out, but it was just, you know, it was interesting to see that they were posing a set list, dream set list question on his official social media. Whether that's going to mean a drastic change in the set list, who knows? I hope it does. Christ, it's been over 2 years. It should be.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's not enough to freshen up. I don't know what is.
And also, you know, our last show a couple weeks ago, we had Adrian Sinclair along with Owen Ling, and yeah. You know, with the Live and Let Die show, we also talked about a little bit about the McCartney Legacy book. Now, a couple days after that episode dropped, they finally announced that it's available for pre-order. So now you can go on Amazon and you can pre-order. Pre-order the book. Now, I'm meant to grab another book here because of the fact that, you know, after we recorded that episode, Andy, we chatted for like about another hour and a half. And, you know, we were just talking about the release of the McCartney Legacy book. And, you know, and Adrian was just giving us a little more detail on it, saying it's just going to be your average size book. You know, it's not going to be some, you know.
Not going to be like this.
Know, it's not going to be like the, you know, the 8 hours to hold you book. You know, it's, they wanted it to be affordable for everybody, which was cool. And that's the thing, because they have a publisher, they can do that, right? You know, a lot of times when you see these self-published books, you know, the price is a little bit more because their money is what's going into it, right? You know, they're a lot of the time, so they want to get that, you know, a lot of, as much as that return money back as possible
on their investment. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's pretty cool. So I think it's on pre-order for like $35, which is very reasonable.
That's reasonable.
For a hardcover book that's going to be, I think it was like over 800 pages or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, I would compare that to TuneIn. You know, TuneIn was an exhaustive, you know, well, obviously researched book.
And right.
The gold standard. And the standard edition of that book was probably, you know, the same amount of money, $25, $30, $35. So the McCartney Legacy, I'm comparing it to TuneIn. in terms of the quality of the writing and the research. So $35 for a hardcover copy, that's a steal.
Yeah, yeah. So I pre-ordered my copy. You know, hopefully maybe when we post this episode, we'll put the link to that to Amazon page again, and you know, check it out. This is I really believe this from the bottom of my heart, because you know, from talking with Adrian Sinclair for years, and you know, and talking with Alan Kozin for years, that this is really going to be the McCartney book that we've all been craving for. This is like, again, like the tune in. This is a Lewison style book that everybody is going to want to read. And I hope everybody supports them, because yes, they're contracted to do two volumes. And hopefully if these books do well, it'll encourage them to continue the series going.
When we spoke to Adrian and Owen, Adrian said that he was currently researching. He was, even though we were talking about 73, he was knee deep into 78, 79 period. Right. So he's knee deep in kind of, you know, McCartney reacting to punk and doing Back to the Egg and kind of thing. So he's knee deep in that right now for the second volume. And I really wish, I hope for four volumes. I mean, so at least a third. You know, because of course, you know, the what McCartney does later in the 80s and we talked about this a little bit in the 90s, there isn't as much to probably talk about in terms of his solo output. I mean, obviously he was incredibly productive in the 90s with the anthology and the Fireman stuff and the Liverpool Oratorio, but if they're going to just talk about his proper recording career, you know, maybe they sum it all up in three volumes. Does it need a fourth one? I think there's a case can be made either side, really.
Well, you know, yeah, I think there could be a case to be made for five volumes, you know, maybe six. I mean, like you say, I mean, the work is there. You know, I mean, not all of it was released, as we know, in the 80s, but I mean, the work is there.
No, but I would hope that the publishers really give them, hopefully this book does so well that they can agree to terms for a third volume. Lewison's got, you know, a three book deal. I think McCartney's solo career warrants at least three.
Right.
You know, if we're gonna cover this, if we're gonna cover his career in every aspect of every detail, which they're gonna do, then it needs at least three volumes. Okay, we're talking about 50 years here. You know, right. I know that Lewison's only going up until I think 76. But his book, I think, when they legally dissolved his book, from what I've read, I think his book is only gonna go up until 76 when they legally stopped, you know, being tied together. That's three books covering basically from the 50s to the middle of the 70s. We're talking 52 years of a solo career here. So I really hope we get multiple volumes. I really do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, head over to Amazon, type in McCartney Legacy, and you know, help them out. I mean, the response to the show was great. And you know, Adrian reached out to me a couple of days ago and saying, you know, again, thanks. And, you know, they're, I think they're like the number two book right now on Amazon. So Beatles related book on Amazon. So that's great.
Excellent. Excellent. Good luck, fellas.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Now, Andy, you, my friend, you got to see Elton John again for the second time on this final leg of the tour. How was it?
Yeah, two times in a week. And it was, you know, having never seen Elton John before, even though I'm a pretty big fan, I have just about all of his records. First time was at Madison Square Garden in end of February, and that was just incredible. Seats were really good. They were the 100 section of the garden, so I was able to look right in. Great seats with my friends. And then kind of impromptu, kind of scored tickets the next week, just a few days ago, to see him 15th row at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And that was absolutely incredible. Now, there's some songs that I'm really not hugely a fan of in his set list, because it's mainly the hits. You got one deep cut in this set list. But even close, like songs like Benny and the Jets, I'm not a fan of. I really cannot stand Crocodile Rock. So, you know, I really don't, but, some of the other songs, some of the 80s, like, you know, sad songs. Okay. To be that close, even the subpar songs were like great because you were that close. I have to say that was incredible. you know, it was 74 years old. He's still, obviously his voice is not the same for the last 30 years, but he still has the power, he's 2 years off. His voice is still stronger than ever. The band is incredible. Davey Johnstone, his original guitar, one of his, Nigel Olsen, these guys he's played with for over 50 years.
Right.
Ray Cooper on percussion. I mean, very tight band to play with. And it was absolutely incredible, life-changing in many ways to see a singer that and an artist who I've admired so much most of my life, to see Funeral for a Friend live and in person up close. If that was the only song he did, I would have been happy with that. I mean, the buildup, the fog machines, the smoke, the lightning, it was like, you're going to go in November. You'll see it for yourself, but it was absolutely incredible. And thank God I got a chance to see him before he didn't really tour. He's not as prolific as McCartney, right? In terms of touring, he tours a lot, but his stops over the last 15 years in the New York area have been very intermittent. Like he's done a few shows, but not like four or five nights in a row, like McCartney did. Like McCartney's done four nights at Madison Square Garden, like multiple times. Elton's only done like one or two nights. And, over the last 15 years, I haven't really had I just didn't have the opportunities to see him, like a McCartney. But it was worth every penny. And it's good for him for calling it a career, but he could still keep going. I mean, what a great show.
And was that a coffee mug from the show too? I saw you with.
It certainly is.
Excellent. Same set list as the week prior.
Same exact set list. His story. I mean, obviously, he didn't speak. It wasn't such like a thing where he just said the same exact thing. His banter was different in between each show. He talked about he talked about how he played at Madison Square Garden 70 something. Times, and of course, like he talked about playing there with Lennon in 74, and like I just got goosebumps, on my neck thinking about hearing him talk about that and being in that same venue, and then showing the little very clip of video footage of him and Lennon together on the stage along the backdrop. It was so moving to hear him talk about his life and his memories, and it kind of all comes to a head at the end. I'm not going to give it away, but at the end for Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, there's like a slideshow of his life. And that's when you see like the footage of Lennon and stuff. And it's so moving. It's so moving. So good luck, Elton. And if you haven't seen it, please go see it because it's absolutely incredible.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. He's just one of those artists that you just, you took for granted. You always expect him to be there. And then now it's finally, this is it, and you're like, and now you're kicking yourself in the ass because you waited, to see him, if you hadn't seen him yet, like we hadn't, So, I'm really looking forward to it. And, hearing your comments from these last two shows is really exciting me to go see him live.
Yeah,
and he still sounds good.
He doesn't have the range, obviously, or the register to go high anymore. But like, Burn Down the Mission just kills it. I mean, all these songs, he just kills it. And some of the songs have like newer arrangements to it. Like he does a really really cool rendition of Rocket Man. Okay, even though you've heard it 1,000 times. Some like the renditions that he does, these arrangements that he does in a live setting makes it even better. So you'll have a great time when you go. Just make sure you and the missus score good tickets for this one. When you go.
Yeah. 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 Very cool. All right, partner. Ready for some questions?
Q&A time.
Q&A time. So yeah, I've got some interesting ones here, and I'll just come out right now and say, depending on how long these questions take for us to answer will determine how many we get through. So if I didn't get to your question, we will save it for another time, and hopefully this goes well.
I think we'll knock them down quick.
Yeah. Okay. So first one is from Serge. Who's been a fan for a while, and he'll message me from time to time, and sending me videos of McCartney and whatnot. So he sent me this question, and here we go. What direction would Paul's music had taken if he had a solo career through the 70s, then in the 80s started Wings? So almost kind of like a vice versa type thing. How do you think Paul's music, you know, what path would Paul's music have taken if he was a solo artist first in the 70s and then, you know, came up with a band in the 80s, you know, Wings in the 80s? So what are your thoughts on that?
Interesting question. My gut tells me that they would not have been as successful. Because for a lot of different reasons, the video age, the ever changing, I mean, what would have been the band in the 80s? I mean, the Wings changed five or six times in the 70s. So what band would it have been in the 80s? Would it have been 71 to 73 Wings? Would it have been 75? What version would it have been? Now, what version of the band would have been most successful in the 80s? I think it's fair to say that that would have been the Wings Over America lineup version of Wings. If any lineup had the commercial ability to have staying power, say in the 1980s, with the ability to make hits, especially in a video age, maybe that's the 75, 76 version of Wings. Maybe it's the final lineup of Wings. You know, when they were kind of, I mean, half of Back to the Egg got a video album anyway, so that maybe a case could be made that it could have been the Lawrence Juber, final lineup of Wings there to do that, you know, with Paul. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I don't know if he would have had any, I mean, obviously I don't think he would have had any of the members in this 80s Wings lineup, you know, if that's, you know, then that he had in the 70s, it would have been a completely different band. Now how his music would have been in the 70s, I think he would have been successful either way. If he was a solo act or if he was
true,
with Wings.
Like a true solo artist. Band. Yeah. He's going to have to, he would have been successful either way, band or no band. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I can see him, you know, being like James Taylor had a lot of success as a, you know, the singer songwriter type thing. You know, I could see that. I could see him having like a backup band, like a Crazy Horse, like Neil Young had, you know, in the 70s. But it wouldn't have been it was really Paul dominated those Wings years, but I wouldn't have seen, you wouldn't see any like co-writes or anything like that with anybody that he would have had, you know, in the 70s. It would have been all pure, you know, Paul and or Linda McCartney written songs.
Right. I think the interesting part of Serge's question there is the 80s aspect of it, because Paul was, as talked about on a previous show that we did, he was at his commercial, like, hottest peak there in the early 70s. So Paul would have been successful on his own with the band in the 70s solo. It would have, if he had a band backing him in the 80s, you know, touring, you know, what would he have been more successful? I mean, you know, that's really become the question, in my opinion. And I think he would have been as successful in the 1980s, in terms of how he did as a performer, you know, having a hit with No More Lonely Nights, having a decent hit album, Flowers in the Dirt. I don't think he would have done any better in the 80s, the band backing him, than he did already.
Okay. You know, yeah, and that's the thing. Now, would it be a super band? Would he have names in that band during the 80s, or would it be just like him and a bunch of, you know, pieces from other bands? You know, bands, what I mean? That's the thing. You know,
wasn't his style to draft superstars into a band? Right. He was never into that. So
It wouldn't have been a Traveling Wilburys style band.
No.
You know.
No,
and I think the course of the music would have changed. You probably wouldn't have seen as many rockers, you know, in that band like you got from Paul in the 70s. You know, I don't think you would have seen. I think it would have been a whole different, completely style, different style band than it would have been.
Take the band that he assembled for some of the Broad Street songs, right? So like Dave Edmunds. Guys.
Yeah.
You know, and they use it for like No Values and Not Such a Bad Boy. That could have been like a band that he could have maybe gone out and, because they were like well-known musicians, but they were not mega stars, right? So his concept of what he wanted Wings to be kind of carries through those to that 1980s period. Just for example, just in that Broad Street thing, by using kind of studio good musicians, but not really superstars. So I think you see the results. If he had a 1980s band, you see what those are. Watch Broad Street. You know, listen to those songs. You know, it's Paul McCartney with a backing band.
Right. Yeah. I think it would have been a completely different kind of band than it would have been, you know, with Wings, especially if he did that in the 80s. So,
yeah. Good question, Serge.
Yeah. Thank you, Serge. This is from our buddy Harry. Harry, myself, and another friend, Don, we do the Wings Collectors there on Instagram. So check that out. Harry's question is, do you think Paul should release live albums as part of an archive series similar to what Neil Young does? And I say absolutely. He should do something like that. But just do it during the 70s, because by the time you get to 89 to now, it's kind of, you know, the same show. I don't think it's, you know... You know, we got those live albums already. You know, we got the Tripping Live. We got Paul is Live, you know, and so on.
Good Evening, but, New York City.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I would say, yeah, but just do the 70s shows, not, you know, nothing.
Nothing
89 to now. Yeah, no.
I'm going to agree and slightly disagree with your take on that one. I think he should absolutely do what Neil Young does. The Who also have done this as well. I think Springsteen has done well. I think everybody's individual experience of a live show, if they want to have that captured and documented for their own collection, should have every right to. The Who, you know, if you attended a Who show in 2001 or two, you could have bought that show right after. You could have bought that concert right because they made the CD for you at the show. You got a soundboard recording of your unique show, and if it wasn't available there, you could order it from the website. So. Yes, the set lists from 89 have been redundant, but they've changed. I mean, we're talking, over 30 years ago. So, I mean, yes, they haven't drastically changed, but they have in a way. There's been a lot of different. I mean, think about all the various Beatles songs that have just been worked into the set list the last 10 years, The Night Before. You know, Yankee Stadium 2011, he opened up with The Night Before. So, yes, they've been Beatle-heavy, but they've also been, like, he's tweaked them up enough to where I think that he should do the thing where, yes, do a campaign where you can buy the show that you saw in Chicago or Wisconsin. You want, that's the show I went to. I want it. I want to have it. I think every show should be available. Right. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But the unique thing about the Neil Young stuff is that he doesn't care, you know, what his audience is going to think about what songs he's going to do, you know. And the other unique thing is that the other unique thing is that one show could be all acoustic, you know, one show could be all electric, you know, one show could be half and half, you know. So
that we know that Paulie does not do that. Paulie is like Elton is a total performer through and through, and wants to deliver the best known stuff to an audience. And that's very commendable. It's the diehard like us. We get a little bit tired of that, but this goes back to when those guys were kids and being disappointed seeing their idols and not do the hits. So that's burned something in their head to say this. Certain artists do that. Billy Joel, Elton John, Paul McCartney, they're going to play the hits. Whereas a Neil Young and a Bob Dylan say, I don't care who's here. This is what I'm doing.
Right.
Like it or leave it. This is what, that's very commendable too. I respect the hell out of that. I wish our favorites would kind of channel a little of that sometimes, but they're such showmen that they just can't. They can't switch off that entertainer hat.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, the Stones have been releasing officially live, you know, a lot of back catalog live stuff, you know, Metallica, I think you can get their stuff online, you know, so a lot of acts have been offering up, you know, live shows, which is just another great way to bring in more revenue, you know.
And the thing is that Paul's team, they're recording these things already. So it's not like it's extra work. Every show that he does is being filmed and recorded. So if you're recording it already, how hard is it to just upload it and say, okay, here's pay $50 a year and you have access to download and stream all this stuff.
Right.
Another good question there, Harry. You should do it though. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, this is from Tony. And, you know, Tony's been a big supporter of the show, so thank you, Tony. His question is, again, another live-related question. Besides Wings Over America, what are your favorite live albums to listen to? And, you know, for myself, you know, the live stuff is not, I don't necessarily seek it as much as maybe some people. When, yeah, I own it all, but I don't necessarily, it's not like the first thing I'll grab when I'm like going on a road trip or something. If I want to listen to McCartney, you know.
No, you won't grab a live album?
9 times out of 10, I won't, you know. But I tell you what, I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, now, I mean, with that full Amoeba gig, that we got a few years back, that is really, that was a great performance, a great show, you know, great song selections. So I would probably, you know, say that that's risen to my second favorites, you know, Amoeba live. Gig? Yeah, the Amoeba, yeah.
Hmm. Is it officially or unofficial releases?
I think it'd be whatever you want it to be, yeah.
Yeah, not counting Wings Over America. I'll probably say Treating the Life Fantastic. As for an official release, that album was such a, and I talked about this when I did my little Things We Bought Today segment the other night.
Yeah.
That was such an important live album document for me as a younger fan to hear all those Flowers songs, the Beatles songs live for the first time ever in, like, you know, 20 years to hear them do Beatles songs. That's a pretty important live recording in my collection. And I don't grab it as much, if I'm in the right mood and I, you know, Fool on the Hill, Maybe I'm Amazed, you know, Sgt. Pepper, all, everything's on there.
Penny Lane.
And it's, Penny Lane.
No, that was 93.
But, you know, to hear their Beatles songs, but they're not old retreads by this point. Like, by 20 years later, you're still doing the same Beatles songs. They're right. if that makes any sense, they're new, they're fresh, newer Beatles songs, even though they're 20 right. years old. So that, for me, it's Tripping the Life Fantastic, hands down. And then if I'm going unofficially, I'm going to go Last Flight, Last Wing Show recording.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah. And that's a pretty good set list as well, that Last Flight, you know.
Absolutely.
And that goes with, goes into to Harry's, you know, the question, you know, about the releasing those live shows. I mean, that would be, and, you know, a great addition to, you know, what I'm assuming they're going to do, you know, when all the Back to the Egg stuff finally clears, you know, all the legal stuff. And then we get, you know, the London Town Back to the Egg, they're going to squeeze in a live, you know, a 79 live, you know,
don't cheapen it. Like, don't drop a cut. See, they did this with McCartney. They took a couple of live tracks and put that on the 2 CD. See, they took a couple, they took Every Night from Glasgow and they put that on there.
Right.
So, they have snuck a few out on these releases. So I hope they just release the show proper when they do that. To your cousin's point, I mean, he texted us the other day and it was a pretty sobering thought. It's been 20 months since the last archive release, which was Flaming Pie in the summer of 2020. That's quite a long time ago now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
very true. Very true. Okay. This is from Tom, and, you know, Tom's been on with us. He, you know, he joined us for the bootleg show, and, Tom Brennan. And, his question is, and I think this is more of a trivia question than a kind of like a, you know, our opinion question, you know, but, and I have two answers in mind. I think this will be suited for you because you know more of the stuff that he's done live, but the question is, what are the songs that Paul has never performed live that he sang lead on with the Beatles? Now, I know there's Rocky Raccoon and Oh Darling. Those are the two I'm pretty sure. Now, I don't think this is a big list either.
No, it's not. Oh, I know for a fact one of them is Hold Me Tight with the Beatles.
Okay.
He's never done that live. That he sings lead on with the Beatles, but he's never done live.
Right.
Yeah, Hold Me Tight from with the Beatles. Oh Darling, Rocky Raccoon, as you mentioned.
Has he done Maxwell's Silver Hammer live?
No. Nope.
Okay, because we got the take off Why Don't We Do It in the Road a few years back at the you know, so that's four, right?
That's four. I'm tempting about grabbing my Beatles CDs to go, but I'm going to reach to see what the hell they are.
No, we got to try to just, you know, come up with it on our own here.
Or no, let me open up iTunes. It's right here. Let me cheat. It's probably got to be earlier stuff. Definitely a little
while, you know, yeah.
So, all right, hold on. Here we go now. He's done till there was you. It won't be long, and all I've got to do are John songs. I'm not going to really count those. Let's see here. He's done all them. Let's go to this one here next. Mr. Tail. He's done I'll Follow the Sun. Kansas City, he's done. What You're Doing. He's never done What You're Doing. He's never done What You're Doing live. Never. Never. He's never done What You're Doing live. Come on. Every Little Thing is a Split. Long Tall Sally, he's done, of course, as well.
Yeah, right.
Let's take a look here. Hard Day's Night. Things We Said Today, he's done.
Things We Say Up. Can't Buy Me Love, he's done.
He's done. And I Love Her. The rest of this is John Heavy. Yeah. So let us go to the next album. Let's see. Help. He's Another Girl. He's never done Another Girl. He's never done Another Girl. I wish you. He did Night Before, which was awesome in 2011, but he's never done Another Girl, which would be awesome to hear live.
Right.
He's done Another Girl from Help. You're gonna lose that girl. That's a John song anyway. Let's see. It's probably 6 or 7. It's definitely less than 10.
It's definitely less than 10. Yeah.
No Another Girl. You lose that girl. That's John. Let's see. You Like Me Too Much. That's George. Tell Me What You See. That's John and Paul. And they don't sing. Yeah, obviously he's done that. And then we get into Rubber Soul Time. And You Won't See Me, he's played.
Right.
He's played that before. Michelle, obviously. I'm Looking Through You.
Yes, I think he has done that.
I'm looking
And You Won't See Me, played. I think he's done.
That's it. That got played in 2004 at Glastonbury. Yeah. I think that got debuted at. And then you get into Revolver, and pretty much from there.
Good Day Sunshine, he's done.
Yeah, everything from that point on.
Got to Get You Into My Life,
Yeah, For No One.
Right.
Yeah, all those songs, pretty much from 66 on has been a slam dunk for the most part. But I think we've answered all your questions there, Tom. And if we left one out, please let us know.
Yeah. Okay, we got one from the Queen here.
Oh, boy.
Fred O'Toole. And this kind of ties into a little bit of the show we did with Ken Michaels the other day that we'll talk about later on in the show. But what unreleased material would you like to finally see the light of day, whether as part of a box set or separate releases, and why?
What? You go first, partner.
Well, you know, there's just so much unreleased stuff. I would love to get the Press to Play stripped down, those demos from with Paul, Eric Stewart, and Jerry Murata. You know, I would love to see the light of day. You know, whatever stuff is still out there from Rupert the Bear that hasn't
the entire soundtrack him and Wings did in 79. They did a whole soundtrack of Rupert music. Yeah.
Right. You know, love to to see the light of day. And then obviously the stuff that, you know, during the Phil Ramone sessions that hasn't got released, the Lindianas and, Return to Pepperland, stuff like that.
Yeah. Obviously any studio outtake stuff would be high on our list of stuff to come out that we wish to see to come out. But I think I'd like to see some earlier Wing stuff kind of work its way out, you know, and kind of an archival, like a Wings kind of like a Wings archival live set, like the best of, like, you know, try to get 10 of the best professionally soundboarded recorded shows from 72 to 76. And especially really on those the early Wings tours, the ones in 73, and release those like in a box set of live early Wing, like an early Wings. I mean, we got that one disc in the you know, the
ones
box,
the but, ones with Henry and Denny out of tune for, right?
Right. Yeah, but I would love to see a true archival of Wings live pre-76, you know, the 72, 73 Wings period, and incorporate video into that, the backyard tape, the James Paul McCartney special, you know. Wait, did we get that on set? I can't remember now.
Yeah,
but it's not really cleaned up though. It's just kind of transferred. But yeah, Wings live footage, you know, and a Wings box set from those early tours was what I'd love to see the most.
Okay, cool. Our buddy Ed Crawford, who you know, as a lot of people may know, joined us for our Broad Street show. He's got, you know, an interesting one because we, you know, a lot of us are 80s fans and he's obviously an 80s fan as well. So his, I think, kind of surrounds the 80s type thing. It says, let's assume that between 79 and 84, that the albums ranging from Back to the Egg to Give My Regards to Broad Street all sold 2 million plus, okay. In the U.S., let's also assume that each of them had at least 2 top 10 hits on each album. If that was the case, how different do you think Paul's set list would have been going from the 80s onward? Do you think that the general public would appreciate Paul's solo work more if this were the case?
I think they'd appreciate that period more, no doubt. Right. Obviously, if he has this kind of success that you're talking about, you know, 2 million, if he sold 2 million between each, you know, on between Back to the Egg and Broad Street. And see, that's a tricky question because commercially, he did very well during that period, okay?
Right.
McCartney 2 sold well. It was a number one. Tug of War was a number one. Pirates of Peace didn't do as well, but had Say on it. It still did very well. Broad Street has No More Lonely Nights. So this is a very, very successful period of McCartney's career. I know it's not considered classic like the 70s, but you know, We All Stand Together comes out during this time period. He's very successful still between 1979 and 1984. So now he's not moving the kind of records that Ed's talking about, but I do agree that it would have changed the set list, you know, a lot, say in 89, 90, had he toured again. You would have seen more stuff from Tug of War, which I know you would have liked, and you would have seen No Lonely Nights worked into a set list and potentially even Press to Play stuff. You would have seen that stuff worked into a set list, but
he
only goes up to 84. But yeah, I do think it would have changed drastically. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree. I mean, let's say if the album Pipes of Peace was a bigger hit. I mean, if it was a top three,
He was talking in the U.S. I know he was talking in the U.S.
But. In the U.S. Yeah. Let's say, you know, Pipes of Peace was the album was a bigger hit here. Yeah. Maybe you would have seen a So Bad, you know, live at one point, you know, maybe you would have seen Say, or something from Broad Street, you know, maybe a rocker or two from Broad Street. Definitely No More Lonely Nights. Let's say No More Lonely Nights goes the number one here in the States.
A hypothetical because obviously after John, Paul wasn't touring, right? But could you imagine, given the success that Say had and John had not died, having Paul and Michael Jackson on doing that song together, could you imagine what that would have looked like?
Right.
Just think about that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wild.
Yep. I mean, I would have loved to have seen, you know, obviously, you know, Spies Like Us and, you know, Once Upon a Long Ago.
Yeah.
I mean, we're craving all that stuff to do for him to do live.
Live, you know, big, very, very successful songs in other markets, right? But not so much here, although Spires Like Us was his last top 10, you know, but these are songs that, you know, these are McCartney classics through and through. And, you know, I don't know. Here's a question I'm going to just kind of pose as a follow-up to that. I don't know. Like, we want to hear these songs live, but I think about, like, what would hearing No More Lonely Nights live ruin your appreciation for it? Like, what if, you know, maybe he couldn't deliver it as good live, you know?
Sometimes I
think, you know what, maybe it's better left that these classic 80s productions are left as classic 80s productions, and we don't hear some horrible out of tune version of, you know, yes, I know. Yeah. Like the thing, you know what I'm saying? I don't know.
It's but I think the 89 band was strong enough, very talented enough to pull out. I think Robbie would have done a great job with the Gilmore guitar bit. Hamish would have done a great, you know, Hamish and Linda would have done great with, you know, with when Paul does backing I know vocals. And then they do the backing with the I know, right. You know,
because Linda's on it anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe, but I think they would have done a great job with it. I mean, I don't know if I don't have as much doubt as you do on that, but
I think that it certainly would have been. I mean, it's too bad given all the success that he had with those songs. I mean, and of course he did like the kind of the shows on television where he mimed these songs, but right, they're not live. Right. Like you know, you watch any of those shows like Friday Night Videos, or he's on SNL, or any of those shows on in the UK. You know, like there's plenty of videos of him, you know, miming to Once Upon a Long Ago when he was promoting it, but he's not actually playing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a live, you go YouTube it, you can find performances of him, of the 80, mm-hmm. of the 89 band, really, as he kind of was forming them in 87, 88 with Chris Whitten and Hamish. And they're doing Once Upon a Long Ago, like on UK television talk shows, but mm-hmm. they're just miming it. You know, that they're just miming it. So I think it's right. The closest we'll ever get to seeing, oh my God, it's live. But they're nice to look at.
Right. Okay, let's go with David, our friend Ghosty, who joined us for
my fellow New Jerseyan.
Yeah, joined us for the was the Choba versus Run Devil Run episode. Yeah. And his question is, this is kind of interesting as well. He said, considering that much of Paul's early solo material was trashed by critics, whom history has since proven wrong, would you like to see a book or a documentary where these same critics are asked to confront their own negative reviews and acknowledge...
I'll write it and direct it, please. Yes.
Or explain the current positive reevaluation of albums like McCartney Ram or the Another Day single.
You, the one who said that Ram was the nadir of rock. Yeah, I'm calling you out. Yeah. What's your take on Ram now, you clown?
You know, this is almost kind of like, you know, when you get like an umpire or a ref, you know, in a game.
Oh, see, he got my Ghosty got my blood is boiling now because see, Ghosty got me all fired up now because he hit me where the heart hurts now because people that come after Paul, it just makes my blood boil. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Ghost. Yeah. Let's go. You're not too far from me.
Yeah. So this is kind of like the, you know, the umps or the refs, you know, that blow a call and, you know, they, you know, you're getting police escorts back to the hotel or whatever, you know, you'll never hear from, you know, but yeah, I mean, that would be so interesting to kind of get a retrospective kind of thing, you know, then and now, you know, what were your thoughts then? I mean, obviously, we know what their thoughts were then, but you know, it, as we all know, sometimes, you know, records grow on you, you know, sometimes you know, it just hits you a different way. And then all of a sudden you get it and it clicks, you know, and it happens. You know, so
my problem with these critics is that they did not listen to these records objectively right. in the 70s when they came out. They listened to it with the preconceived notions and agendas. And that's my problem with these, with the critics at the time who panned Retro Speedway and Ram and McCartney. They looked at it in the, and I, to their defense, I can kind of see why, because in the dust up of the Beatles thing, we know a whole lot more information now than we did than we knew back then. So in a way I kind of don't blame them, because with foresight, we can see that, you know, that clearly wasn't the way. And all they really had to go on was what they were looking at the time. But
right.
That doesn't excuse them for not objectively listening to the record without their preconceived notions about okay. fallout from the Beatles. They were tying it to the Beatles, and that was mistake number one and an egregious one. So yeah, I'm
right.
You know, this is what I wrote my paper on. So I'm a little defensive.
You get a little worked up over there.
I do. I wrote 100 pages on it. So yeah, I get fired up when this topic comes up.
Right. No, that's great. Breathe. Love it. All right, we're gonna. This is the last one here. This is from Joseph. Okay, as a Paul McCartney fan, we always want another album. Okay, from Paul McCartney. However, what would you like more as a possible last album? A live album, the highlights, his best performances, his classics, an album like Chaos and Creation, or McCartney, or an album like McCartney 3, where he does 90% of all the instruments and only has the band come in one or two songs. I would like an album of him doing most of the stuff, you know, with the producer or without a producer, doesn't matter. That's what I would kind of like as a last album. And he doesn't have to announce it as a last. I don't think we'll ever get an announcement, hey, this is my last album or whatnot. No. But if he knows it's going to be his last album, he knows what he's going to want to do for it, I think.
Obviously.
You know what? And then that'll be done. But I would really want something more personal, more raw, more, you know, less production, and something more like the first McCartney record. Not necessarily, you know, half realized ideas, you know, fully realized ideas and whatnot, but kind of recorded more,
stripped down.
Yeah, that's a perfect word, stripped down. Yeah.
All right, I think you and I will differ on this one a little bit. I would like to see him go out with a record kind of like what New was, which had a lot of production and a lot of producers guiding Paul on what the sound should be. Because I think Paul had so many yes men around him his whole life that just kind of tell him what he wants. And he really, and I think you guys are going to talk about this on your Fuck More Talk coming up, I think, tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
The different producers and stuff. But I think I'd love to see him go out with an album like that, that has him, you know, because obviously a DIY album, everybody would love a DIY, but we have that with McCartney 3.
Right.
You know, and the fact of the matter is that sooner or later, the last album is going to be here, right? It's going to be 80. He's going to be 80 in 3 months. So the last album is going to be here sooner than later. And if there was going to be a last album, I'd like it to be with producers, contemporary producers that can challenge him to make a contemporary sounding record that motivate him. Because sometimes he rests on his laurels, and it's just nice to have a breath of fresh air to say, why don't you try this differently? And with New,
right,
you had that with four different, with Epworth and Giles and Ethan Johns, I forget the other, and David Epworth. You had four different producers doing that. And I would love for him to close his career with a record of that style.
Mm. Okay. No, fair enough. I mean, that's interesting. You know, I'm sure it'll be a great album no matter what.
Right. But to your point, I mean, you want to see a DIY thing. That's kind of what McCartney 3 is.
But not necessarily a McCartney 4 or a 5. You know, it doesn't have to be that. I mean, I like the stuff that he does. I mean, yeah. I mean, Chaos and Creation could have almost been considered a McCartney, you know, a DIY, you know, album. You know, but I mean, obviously other people played on it, but I like that kind of record. I also want him to be more, you know, lyrically challenging sometimes.
And that record has that, but also why? Because look at the producer of that record, Nigel Godrich, who pushed him.
Right. Yeah. Not true.
Nigel Godrich pushed him, and there was friction.
Right.
There was friction with that record.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It comes off in the songs to your point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, again, I don't think he's going to come out and say, this is my last album or anything like that. But yeah, I was kind of more stripped down, like you said, I think would be cool. If
hey, listen,
if he knew this was going to be his last record, that's what I would like. Kind of like, a bookend, from McCartney to the last record.
I don't think that tale is going to be told that way. The last record is going to be the last record, whether he makes one more record or three more records or five more records. Because we all know, I don't think there's any doubt in either of our minds that even at 80 something, he'll just produce something. He'll just keep producing some kind of, music. I don't doubt that. I mean, the man's gonna be creating music until he's no longer breathing.
Oh yeah, until he physically can't do it. Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
I agree. Yeah,
that's it. So what? We'll love you, and I will love whatever it ends up being. I know that.
Right. Exactly. Well, cool. That was our very first fan Q&A. Thank you, everybody, for sending the questions. And, hopefully in the future we'll do something like this again. And, so thank you once again. Andy, anything you want to talk about before we sign off?
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, Tom reached out to me with an idea to kind of grow our channel a little bit and create some more series on our channel. And he did that. He got the ball rolling by kind of coming up with a series called Things We Bought Today. And he did a video about 2 weeks ago showing what he got. And then I did my own version of that just the other night. And it's been a really nice little way to kind of just keep our content growing, showing recent things. Tom is like the buying machine. So he gets stuff like every other day. I have stuff from decades worth, which I haven't shown yet, but I'm not at the pace that Tom's at, but it's, We've expanded the channel a little bit to have series like that. And Tom's going to have another one coming up next week. He also has one on there called Legit or Counterfeit, which he did by showing his Brung to You By. And based on the feedback that we got on that video, it looks like he does have a Fugazi of Brung to You By.
It's possible. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about bringing that up again, too, because, one of the people that commented suggested I completely forgot to do this was to go in the archive here, take the RAM archive book out, and there's a picture of it in there, and the press ring, which is the main concern, is the exact same size of the one that I have, so a lot of people and then the one that another
maybe they have a bootleg one.
Right, you said. That's
maybe the 25-year-old somethings that put that package together for Paul.
Exactly. So I do not doubt that the jacket is a Fugazi. I do not doubt that one bit. It's the actual vinyl that I'm still skeptical on. So I'm not 100% convinced that it's a fake just yet. But I get it. I get it. I mean, someone did finally send me a picture of the smaller ring. I've seen it now. But again, it is what it is. I mean, I'm still happy to have it because I never listened to it.
You never listened to it. And you heard these little 30-second, now hear this. Now hear this. If it's fake or not, whatever, you still got something that's pretty, as a McCartney collector, you can appreciate,
And exactly. That's the bottom line. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to just talk about was the expanding the channel into those little series that we did the last few weeks.
Yeah. Like Andy said, when this is posted, there might have been another one posted already. So we'll see about that. But I'll be ready to do another one here at any given time. So thank you for all the views on that and the comments. We really appreciate that and the positive feedback. I mean, I know people just love seeing that kind of thing. I think it's pretty cool. A couple people mentioned that, I forgot all about that, or I didn't know about that. And then they went out and got it the next day. So it's, us collectors are crazy. We have to have it. Yeah, you have to have it. Absolutely. So I'm glad you did one, and I'm glad that the feedback from that was awesome.
Yeah.
So and again, thank you everybody.
Yeah, there. No, thank you. I wasn't even planning on doing it, but Tom was like, do one when you get a chance. And I got home that night. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna just throw this together. And I didn't even know an hour before that I was gonna do it, I said, okay, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna grab this, and I'll just do it.
Right.
So thank you for inspiring
me. Yeah. And there's another series that hopefully will get off the ground, no pun intended, very soon. You guys will see that when that pops up. So, you can get a hold of us. You know, we are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Two Legs Podcast. Please check out our YouTube channel. We're continuing to grow. Thank you, and we're getting close to that goal of 1,000 subscribers. We're really close. We're just over 50 at the time of recording. I think we're at 53 more to go before we hit our goal of 1K. And then, like as we talked about in the past, we will do a 1,000 subscriber contest once we've reached that goal. So again, it's Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. Andy just put up a new little banner up there, so thank you for doing that, partner. It looks great. And you can also email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. I do want to talk about our two appearances on the last two episodes of Ken Michael's radio YouTube channel. And a couple weeks ago, we went on there and we talked about what was Paul McCartney's peak. And we had a great time talking about that. And then week after that, we went on and we talked about our three favorite officially unreleased Paul McCartney tracks. So that was a great time hanging out with Ken Michaels on his channel, Ken Michaels Radio. So go over there, check it out, and please subscribe. And I'm sure Ken's going to be back on our show very soon. To continue a series that we started a while ago called A Friend Like You, which is going to talk about the songs that Paul McCartney worked on or gave away in the 80s and 90s. So it wouldn't be necessarily his main catalog or canon, if you will. But again, these are songs that, you know, he was gracious enough to, hey, somebody called him up. Hey, can you give me a song? Okay, sure. Here's On the Wings of a Nightingale. There you go.
Wild.
Yeah, exactly. So be on the lookout for that. So that'll be part two of that series. So again, everybody, we really appreciate you watching us, listening to us, however you partake in this show. We really appreciate it. So everybody, as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
Peace.